Let's call this meeting to order. Let the record reflect that it's 3:35 PM on Tuesday, April 1st, 2010. I'd like to go and notice that we have a quorum here. We've got Senator Thomas, Senator Kukis, Senator Menard, myself, Senator Olson. The purpose of this meeting today is to take up the following legislation, which is Senate Bill 308, the Determination Population for Community Revenue Sharing Payments. It's not the chair's intent to go ahead and move this bill out today, but we want to first hear it and then take public testimony and see what goes on from there. Senate Bill 308 is a committee bill brought forward by, at the request of our vice chairman, Senator Thomas. Senator Thomas, you have the floor, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I ask the committee to introduce this legislation in an effort to create a more fair and reasonable system for determining the population of Alaska communities for the purpose of calculating state revenue sharing payments. For several years, municipalities in my district have raised concern that the state is undercounting their population. There's no viable appeal process that larger communities can use to correct the state's estimates. The Alaska Department of Commerce has the responsibility for determining community population for revenue sharing. Historically, Commerce has used the population figures generated by the Department of Labor's demographers. Commerce allows communities to appeal the labor figures. However, the mandated appeals process or method are not workable for communities of over 1,000 residents that cannot reasonably conduct a complete head count each spring. Unfortunately, you're required to do this annually. You can't really establish a baseline and then go on from there the next time that you have some difficulty. Therefore, several municipalities have asked the legislature to amend the law to require the Alaska Department of Commerce to accept U.S. Census estimates as an alternative to the Alaska Department of Labor estimates if the Census Bureau finds a larger community population. State statute gives the Department of Commerce the broad authority to determine community population using population data the department determines is reliable. It is the department's regulations that require communities to undertake complex and excessively expensive data collection efforts in order to appeal the Department of Labor, basically, stifling any effort to really do it. It's just too expensive. And it is a regulation that do not allow census figures as an alternative data source. I've encouraged the department to revise its regulations, but that has not occurred, and so Senate Bill 308 is before you. I appreciate the committee's consideration of this issue. With your permission, I would ask my aide, Catherine Reardon, to come forward and present the more detailed explanation of the bill. And we have included a fair amount of information, probably more than you'd ever expect to need in the packet, but just in case, it does have various appeals that have been done in the past, and then both the methodology of the U.S. Census Bureau as well as the state's Department of Labor, and it passes through Commerce because they are the one that awards, obviously, municipal revenue sharing. So, Catherine, if you would please come forward.
Mr. Reardon, please. Any initial questions of the bill sponsored by members of the committee? If not, Ms. Reardon, please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Catherine Reardon, an aide to State Senator Joe Thomas. As Senator Thomas mentioned, the state statute gives the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, the authority to adopt population figures that it considers reliable for the purpose of calculating and distributing revenue sharing. This legislation is a one-page bill that says that those population figures cannot be smaller than the U.S. Census figures for that community. As Senator Thomas explained, the current method for calculating the population figures is a creature of Department of Commerce regulation and therefore can be modified by the department. Historically, they have used Department of Labor population figures because the Department of Labor has its research and analysis section with a demographer as their starting point, and then under Commerce regulations, communities are permitted to appeal those numbers if they feel that they are too low. The statutes and regulations are in your packet. The methods that communities are permitted to use to provide alternative data are referred to in regulation as the headcount and the housing unit alternatives. Communities that are smaller than 1,000 have to use the headcount method. This method is described in detail in Department of Commerce materials in your packet, but basically it's another census, you know, going to check on each resident. Appears to work acceptably for smaller communities. When we looked at the communities that had successfully challenged the Department of Labor figures over the last number of years, all of the communities that had done so, I believe 50-some, were communities of less than 1,000 people, because a headcount is a feasible thing to do, with the exception of a successful appeal by the Fairbanks North Star Borough, by Valdez, and by Juneau. There are stories or histories about why those housing unit appeals were possible for those three communities in those three instances, the larger communities. So it appears that this is a problem primarily of the larger communities that can't do headcounts. And so what the bill is asking is that if the U.S. Census estimates have determined a larger number, that will be used, thus saving the larger communities from having to try to conduct housing unit data collections or headcounts, which they could never do. This was not a topic I was familiar with, so I had to do a little bit of self-education about the housing unit method. And I'm certainly not an expert on it, but you have before you a summary, which being a summary is not, you know, all-inclusive, but a summary of what the housing unit method involves. The housing unit method is referred to in department regulations, and then there is a whole booklet that gives them instructions on how to do this that is also in your packet. Significant aspect or thing that helped me appreciate why larger municipalities view this as a problem came through when the Fairbanks North Star Borough informed us that their understanding of the headcount method was that it would require them to go to 23,985 structures, residences, spread over the borough's 7,441 square miles. Because the housing unit method as adopted by the department doesn't simply allow you to say we've got 60,000 households, we just need to go to 10% of them. You need to go to a certain percentage in each of your service areas and census areas, and so you really do have to be going out to the difficult to reach remoter parts of your community. As you could imagine, to try to visit and interview the folks in 23,000 households during the appeal period between January 15th and April is very expensive and in a lot of ways just not really viable in terms of the number of people you have to employ and train and get out there and get the data back. That's further compounded by the fact that if you do achieve this and you succeed in proving you have a larger number of residents, the next year you're back to square one and have to do it again. That new number doesn't become your starting block, and Department of Commerce / Labor does not then base its estimation on modifications of that. Instead, they go back to their usual baseline. So this process that would cost someplace, you know, between $100,000 to $150,000 for a borough like Fairbanks would have to be conducted every year, or every 2 years now, but possibly every year in the future. So that is the difficulty. One might say, what's wrong with the Department of Labor figures? What's better about the census figures? And I guess from my layperson's limited experience, I'd say they both seem to be good faith, reasonable ways of trying to estimate population, and neither of them is going to come up with an 100% accurate result. They're estimates. So this isn't an attempt to say that the census information is better than the Department of Labor's calculation. It's that since both of the numbers are by their very nature going to be wrong, because they're estimates. It's to give the communities the benefit of the doubt by allowing them to have the higher of these two credible, reliable sources. The other reason to ensure that the number is not lower than the census number is that if a community desires to appeal the U.S. Census estimate, there's also a process that they have. And that process, as the Fairbanks North Star Borough has experienced it, is less expensive and less time-consuming, but still reliable. And that can be details of that can be explained. The other advantage to the census is once you prevail in an appeal, the U.S. Census uses that as their baseline for their next year's estimate. So you go through the effort, you do it once, and then you kind of get the benefit of that work and don't have to do it every year. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that you'd like or to step down and open it up to public testimony.
Any questions of, Senator Kukesh?
Just a comment. I'm glad that was only a 14-page bill. I mean, 14-line bill. That was a long explanation for a 14-line bill.
But a good one, I'll tell you. Just a comment.
Any further questions of Senator Bernard?
Well, if I can, if you would allow me to bring it close to home, like, say, the Mat-Su Borough, how is this going to affect the Mat-Su Borough?
Through the chair, Senator, it would have the effect that if the department, if the U.S. Census estimate for the Mat-Su Borough's population was larger than the Department of Labor's estimate, the Mat-Su Borough would get the larger number as its population for the calculation of municipal assistance revenue sharing.
Follow-up, Senator Bernard.
So is it perceivable that with the big cities being Palmer and Wasilla, if we went with the census numbers rather than the labor, which would be the more, it would be more advantageous for us to go with the city of what, to go with the labor numbers or no? For
Through the chair, Senator. It simply depends on how the estimates work out year to year. There isn't one that will be reliably larger than the other, but you'll get the larger of the two. There is something in your packet there that is a spreadsheet that shows over the last 5 years the Department of Labor and the census figures for each community and the percent difference between them. There are two spreadsheets in your packet, but so you can see, and of course, it's my understanding of revenue sharing, you get your borough population number, and then your cities get subtracted from that to find out what's left for your borough. So in some cases, one number might be better for your city
and
one source for your borough.
Follow-up, Senator Bernard?
No, just in our cases, we are the area that's growing still the fastest, and so I want to be on task. No, I really want to understand this to show concern for the Mat-Su Borough should they lose out, but then the cities would be at an advantage, but then maybe the borough doesn't have to give them as much money, so, you know, it, yeah.
Senator Thomas, do you have a question or comment?
No, I would just say in the case of Mat-Su and at least Wasilla, both of those, I believe, both of those, the U.S. Census showed a greater number
than
the labor would. And as we're saying, it's not necessarily that we're saying one is more correct all the time than the other. It's just the point that since there are discrepancies back and forth, and there have been appeals by particularly the smaller villages and towns that you can actually go door to door. You know, you could do it in a couple of weeks, walk through a 1 mile square area with 450 or 850 people in it and count heads, and you know, people know people much more in smaller areas. So that's accurate. This bill gives the opportunity to take the larger number without having to go through the appeals process and struggle with the attempt to try and count, in the case of the Mat-Su Borough, 80, 85,000 people, and in the case of the Fairbanks North Star Borough, 100,000. And in some cases, an area like the Denali Borough, with a small population but a huge area, would be just as impossible a task, you know, just covering the area, so anyhow, and so spread out so many different little pockets.
Senator Kukesh.
I just want to make the comment, and I think he covered it already. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this bill because it's not really huge. I think the basic premise of it is that you take the larger number, whichever is that's what it really comes down to, and you give the benefit of the doubt to the community.
Right.
And you do it in statute. That's what it really comes down to.
Well, I've got some questions. If why does the Department of Labor have a demographer to start off with?
Mr. Chairman, I don't feel totally qualified to answer that except to say that the Department of Labor has a whole section that's research and analysis that actually is in charge of census-type information plus all of our kind of job growth and all of that kind of data. It's quite it's a substantial operation from the budget process, as I recall.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. And what is their stance on the bill? Or do you know?
I can't speak to that.
Sure. Have you heard anything from the Alaska Municipal League as to whether they're in support of this bill?
No, I have not, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And then is there any open opposition to the bill?
Mr. Chairman, not that I have heard in the office.
As you look at let's take example of this year. Mm-hmm. We've got $60 million for revenue sharing that's going to be out there. Mm-hmm. If you increase the portion to those populations that appeal and get a larger number, mm-hmm. that means somebody's got to give someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming it's the smaller communities that are probably going to be having to get corrected numbers that are there. How are these communities not weighing in? Are they not aware of the situation, not aware of this bill that's coming on to voice opposition, or are they just kind of mute and just kind of taking whatever comes from the state?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not certain that it's the smaller communities that they would necessarily lose in this. When I'm looking at this chart that shows the census versus DOL numbers,
sure.
The whole huge list of communities, when I look at I know this is not a small community, but looking at Bethel, the census in 2008 said they had 6,468 people, whereas Labor said 5,665. So in that case, they would have done better with this bill, with the census. Acatan seems to be in the same situation where there are the census believes that they have 871 people and Labor that they have 796. And plus the fact that these communities that are the smaller ones would retain under commerce regs, assuming they'd keep the same regs, the option of doing the headcount to to correct if they somehow had lost came out in a situation they found unfair. Although I completely acknowledge your point that there's a $60 million
sure.
limited pool.
Sure.
And that when populations of some communities go up, that means less for the others.
Okay. If there are no further questions of the presenter, we'll go ahead and go to public testimony. First, we have Elizabeth Gray from the Mat-Su Borough. Are you on, Mrs. Gray?
Hello. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Elizabeth Gray. I'm the assistant manager for the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. I'm here today to let you know that the Matanuska-Susitna Borough opposes Senate Bill 308. We believe the current method for fund allocation is just fine. And I'd like to touch briefly on some of the reasons why we oppose this bill. Can you hear me okay?
You're coming loud and clear.
Okay. The existing funding formula is utilized for purposes other than just state revenue sharing and is utilized by the federal government in order to determine grant eligibility received and helps determine whether or not a borough can become a metropolitan planning organization as well as other uses. Those standing to lose the most funding in allocation are Anchorage, Juneau, and the Matanuska Susitna boroughs. Other boroughs would potentially lose funding as well, including Kenai, the Lake and Peninsula Borough, the North Slope Borough, and the Northwest Arctic boroughs. Initial figures that we have show that under SB 308 as written, the Matanuska Susitna Borough would lose $295,000, and Anchorage would lose about $200,000. Indeed, the Matanuska Susitna Borough would lose the largest amount of money if this bill passes. In addition, there is currently an appeals process in place through the Department of Labor, as you all discussed earlier. The Department of Labor numbers seem to be pretty accurate, and they have access to the permanent dividend fund records for cross-verification. It is our understanding of the census records that it indicates that census data is not always readily available for many rural areas. The proposed legislation may actually harm many of the rural areas rather than help. The Matanuska Susitna Borough opposes the passage of SB 308 and believes that all boroughs, organized or unorganized, should be treated fairly and all should continue using the current funding formula. This funding is vital to providing services to our citizens in the form of ambulances and road infrastructure, as well as other emergency services. Cutting funding at a time when the Matanuska Borough continues to grow is counterproductive to our needs and to meet the infrastructure needs and the needs of our population. At the very least, we believe this legislation needs to be clarified to indicate that the higher population numbers could be used. And this concludes our testimony, and we thank you for taking your time to listen to our concerns.
Do we have any questions of Ms. Gray? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Gray. Could you tell me how you calculate the concept that you would lose the funding, the grant funding, and municipal revenue sharing?
I have a table here that I don't know if you have in front of you or not, but it's SB 308 Community Revenue Sharing Payment Estimates based on FY11 preliminary program data. Happen to have that in your packet?
I believe we do.
Yeah, it's that one that's handier.
Go ahead, Ms. Gray.
When I look at that, I see that the difference to the Matanuska Susitna Borough is negative $295,318. If we use this new funding formula.
That's right. But you're basing that on the concept that the money is spread around more and it is a finite pool. So even though your population went up, you would lose money because it's spread around to other communities?
I just see it as, you know, if we don't continue with our current funding allocation, that we would lose money for the Matanuska Borough at a time when we're continuing to grow.
Correct, but you're saying it's a finite dollar figure. So if your population increases, then you lose money based on your increased population, based on other population increases in other areas, because it's a finite pool. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's correct. Money would be going to other places.
It would be being distributed more fairly, and you're opposed to that happening.
I'm opposed to the current method of funding allocation.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Senator Menard.
Yeah, I just had a couple questions. And so you also, what I'm hearing you say you object that this bill only affects the unorganized borough, and that organized boroughs such as the Matsu falls under the definition of municipality?
Yes, I believe that we should have the same fair funding allocation.
Follow up, Senator Mayor?
No.
Okay. Ms. Gray, you know, with all due respect, as we look at some of the populations that are out there and looking at the Fairbanks North Star Borough, as pointed out, it looks like the Department of Labor has an 8,000 population count below what the census has. And when you deal with something like that, that's almost 10% of what the census has. How do you justify that as far as accuracy goes?
Well, why isn't that true for all of the other boroughs as well?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm just asking, you know, if we're trying to look at a fair and equitable distribution of the resources that are here, community revenue sharing in particular, and if it shows that there is the Department of Labor's numbers are off, let's try and get them more correct. Is that not a noble effort?
The only one that, as I'm looking at this, the one that I see that seems to be different is Fairbanks. Is that not correct?
There are other populations that are out there that also are showing negative numbers. Isn't that correct, Senator Thomas?
Yes, there are. You know, if you study the sheets and go back and look at the other population over the years, this is just an estimate. If we're still talking about the one. I'm not sure how to describe it because they're both very similar, but the one that has five cups all the way from, I forget what year, 2005 does it start? It goes from 04 to 08. You find a broad range of things that happen, and you find the same in this particular one here as well. There are pluses and minuses all the way along the line as far as I see. So there are increases and decreases. It just happens to be the ebb and flow of populations throughout the state. And you are increasing in population. There's no doubt of that. And because of the finite aspect of municipal revenue sharing being $60 million number, as the numbers increase throughout the state, obviously that money gets spread around a little bit differently on an annual basis. There's just no doubt of that.
Okay.
If there's no specific question on Ms. Gray, I think we'll go on to our next person that's on. Ms. Gray, do you have any final comments?
I just wanted to thank you for your time and attention to our concerns at the Matanuska Sitna Borough.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. Next, we have Dean Westlake. Mr. Westlake, are you on, sir?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me okay?
You're coming in loud and clear, Dean.
Okay, thank you. And Matt Sue, thank you. Those are really good questions. I really appreciate them. I'm over here at the Northwest Arctic Borough.
Dean, would you identify yourself for the record, please, and then go ahead with your testimony?
Oh, okay. I'm Dean Westlake. I'm an assemblyman at the Northwest Arctic Borough, and I work over at Nano Regional Corporation.
Okay.
Matt, so you bring up a good point, and here, you know, at our borough, the numbers are pretty close. However, I think you would probably be the first one to be wanting this, because it isn't so much for today as 4 years down the road. You're the fastest growing borough out there. This stuff is crucial, so I think getting out there and saying, you know, well, our money is going to be down less, because you're going to count more accurately. I think it might send the wrong message, and I'm sure that's not what you want. I fully support this idea. I think it's long overdue. We've got a lot of places out here where, you know, people don't necessarily live in town. They do live in camps. This isn't the end-all in a village or a town. I lived in interior Alaska on the Yukon, and the most wonderful, hardworking people are out there, and they're not there to be counted for anything, and we do need a mechanism out here where we can. We're the ones that live out here in these areas. We can get a better count than someone that's going to be up here to do it in 2 weeks' time or a month's time out there. So this is something I really do favor, and I'm glad you did your homework. Thank you so much for that.
Any questions, Mr. Westlake, by members of the committee? If not, Dean, has any appeals been filed either by the city of Kotzebue or any of the villages in the Northwest Arctic Borough?
Yes, Kotzebue. I wanted to issue a challenge because the numbers were so close, and this is where we really do have the problem, folks. I've been working as a city planner here. The reason we want the appeals is we don't have the money. Yet if we go over here and try and we're not put in an awkward situation, We know the numbers are there. We don't have the money to prove up to this. If we just go by the numbers that are presented there, take the highest one. We can do it. Cotsby is a good example. We're a service district to 11 other villages. The ambulances get out there to the airport. We provide services out to the villages, and we're using our own coffers to be able to do this. So we run short on money a lot of times. So to be able to contest it, we need to come up with a huge amount of money that we don't have.
Okay. Any other questions of Mr. Ristlake by members of the committee? If not, thanks for coming out this afternoon, Dean. Next, we have Lisa Von Bargen from the city of Valdez. Ms. Von Bargen, are you on, ma'am?
Ms. Von Bargen unfortunately had to step out of her office for about 5 minutes. Did I just have her contact you when she returned?
If you would, please.
Okay, thank you.
Next, is there anybody else online that wants to testify? If not, we'll come into the room here. We have Tyson Fick from the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. Mr. Fick.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for allowing me to testify today on this important policy call by
Mr. Tyson, or Tyson,
Tyson Fick, Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development Legislative Liaison. Like I said, thank you for having me. The department at this time is neutral on this bill, but we are certainly here to answer some technical questions about SB 308. Mr. Bill Rolfson has produced a spreadsheet that's in your packet. He administers the Community Revenue Sharing Program and can certainly talk about the specifics of how this would affect the program currently or in the past. Has a great historical knowledge. Brigida Winlish-Cole is here to answer any questions about the differences in methodology of the two population estimates we are considering here, as well as the appeals process the department follows via regulation. That said, we have pretty good confidence in Department of Labor's numbers in most instances because for the simple reason that they have access to the permanent fund file, which other states, certainly demographers, would like that powerful of a tool when they're estimating populations. The census estimate versus the Department of Labor estimate, a difference between the two does not necessarily show superiority or greater accuracy of one individual number. It just shows that they are different estimates. There's not an inherent greater believability based on one or the other as far as looking at that. There is one issue that there's a different timeline between the census estimates and the Department of Labor numbers. The labor numbers, typically we have them by mid-January and census by March. And for a number of reasons, the department has been trying to speed up payments in all of our revenue sharing programs. And a delay in payments would really be, not an acceptable deal for us. So we would put us in a situation of using older numbers, even a year's previous numbers in the event of a census appeal, so that we can get the checks out in time to make those, to buy fuel, to, in the springtime is typically a really difficult cash flow time before you start getting fish receipts, before you start getting other things. So we've been trying to speed up those payments to communities. And then, I've heard a lot of talk about the question of why is it that, every time we get an appeal, it wins. Well, presumably, it's because, for one, we work with communities and our directive in Article 10 of the Constitution to advise and assist local governments. We work with communities through the appeals process, try to make sure all the ducks are in a row as they go through it. And then, presumably, when a community goes through a head count, for instance, and they come back and they find out that their appeal is on the negative side, it doesn't go forward. We only see the ones where they're going to win the appeal in that instance. And I would encourage Mr. Rolfson to come up at the committee's will to explain how the differences come out with the MATSU results based on Alaska Statute 296860, how he goes through, and when you have a situation where there are communities within boroughs, how you keep from double counting in the event, in that event. And any, thank you for your time.
Any questions, Mr. Fick, by members of the committee? Senator Thomas.
And he may want, thank you, Mr. Chairman, he may want to punt this question. I'm looking at this document that we're looking at, and am I having a little hard, little difficulty understanding how we arrived at the SB 302 population number being the same as the U.S. Censuses and not maybe the same as DCCED's, since we're allowing the option to take either.
I would ask Mr. Rolfson to talk about that one.
Any further questions, Mr. Fick? If not, why is it that the Department of Labor has a demographer and it's not in your department?
I would have to ask Department of Labor that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And is there any opposition to have something in your department?
We certainly would have no opposition to that. You know, what we would ask is, it does put us in an odd situation, the appeals process here, where, you know, it's either we make Department of Labor mad or communities mad.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place on that. So, you know, certainly an interim project of looking at the whole appeals process is underway already.
Okay. Are you opposed to modifying the appeals process, though, so that there's a fairer way of looking at it as opposed to the way it is right now?
We certainly are not opposed. You know, we would like to take a look at it, yes.
Okay. If not, thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon. Next, we'll go to the City of Valdez. Ms. Von Bargen, are you on, ma'am?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee. Thank you very much for your patience with me as I had to step out of the office. The City of Valdez is wholeheartedly in favor of SB 308, and we encourage you to look favorably upon it. The City of Valdez has found itself in a position where the Department of Labor numbers are significantly lower than what we believe our annual population is, and in fact, we have done our own population estimate approximately every other year for the past decade. And what we have found is an additional 600 to 1,000 people above what the state estimate is every time we have done the count. And although the census numbers tend to be lower than what our own population estimates are when we conduct our own study, we just look at this as one more tool in the toolbox. It's just one more option for us to rely upon when we're looking at population counts. And so with that in mind, we are certainly not in opposition to it because it allows us to continue to do our own estimate, as is already an option under the state regulations and statutes, and it allows us to use the census numbers if those happen to be advantageous for us as well.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of Ms. Von Bargen by members of the committee? If not, what I'd like to do is go ahead and ask, what is the cost to an actual count that you have had?
Is that a question for me?
Yes, it is.
We typically spend, and in Valdez, our population is small. We have about 4,500 residents. So we will typically spend $3,000 to $5,000, but on top of that, we spend hundreds of staff hours. And I don't have a figure on the staff time involved, but it is hundreds and hundreds of hours.
So, Ms. Van Bargen, if I'm misseeing the numbers correctly, if they're consistently 600 to 1,000 below, they're actually miscounting about between 20 and 22%. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And have you ever lost an appeal?
We have not, not since I've been around.
And how many times have you appealed?
This last one, I believe, was my fifth in 2009.
And were they consistent year after year, or was over a 20-year period?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that question?
When you had the appeals process, was it a consecutive, one year continuous with the next year that you appealed, or was it over a 20-year period?
So the populations, when we do a population count, they hold steady for 2 years. And I understand that Mr. Rolfson is in the room, so he might describe this a little bit better. The population count that we did last year in 2009 was actually for the 2008 population. And that counts for 2008 population and 2009, which are actually used in 2009 and 2010. So the number that I did last year was also good for this year as well, so I didn't have to redo my population, unless I wanted to.
Okay, and it's my understanding that the census just released new numbers here in March, and how do they coincide with the numbers that you have in front of you?
I have not seen new census numbers for Valdez, and we are, Valdez is well below the population threshold for getting numbers as efficiently as they do for the larger communities or larger areas like Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau. We have to do quite a bit of digging to get information from the Census Bureau.
Okay, if there's no further questions, Ms. Van Bergen, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon.
I appreciate your time.
Next, we have Bill Ralston. No, Mr. Ralston, are you here?
To answer questions?
Sure, come on up.
Just to answer questions. We got questions for?
For the record, I'm Bill Rolfson, an employee of DCRA, and I'm here to answer any questions of the committee.
Do we have any questions for Mr. Ralston?
I do.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ralston, reference was made to the number of appeals. Do you have the number, the total number of appeals that have been placed, and how many were changed up or down or stayed the same? Do you have that statistic?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, you might have this in your packet.
We have that.
Okay, at the request of the Fairbanks North Star Borough, I did a quick review of my files to look at the appeal. So these are the ones that had come in by fiscal year that were successful. As Mr. Fix stated, we work with municipalities, and again, the reasons these were successful was our working with the communities. And again, if a community did a local headcount, let's say, and their number came in a little bit less than the Department of Labor number, obviously, I'm sure the city council would think twice about submitting that as an appeal when it would actually show a decrease in population. So I think that tends to show why they're almost 100% successful once we receive them.
My question is, my question is, how many appeals totally have there been, whether they went through them totally or not, whether they realized the error of their ways and didn't submit their findings to you and just said, well, we just want to forget it and we'll take your number?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, I wouldn't have an accurate number for that because I'm sure there's many instances where that has occurred at the local level where that information has not been passed on to the department. So, but we're assuming that there have been instances that a local estimate has been conducted where it was just not submitted, but we would not be knowledgeable of that. So we cannot give you an accurate number how many have actually taken on this process but not completely followed through with it.
But you think it's advisable to put that on record, that you think that it's a sizable number or something? To
I don't think it's a very sizable number.
Okay, all right. Well, I appreciate
but I'm sure it does happen on occasion.
Okay, if it happens on occasion, that's different than what I was led to believe by somebody else's testimony. Let's see. Another question.
Senator Thomas, please.
Certainly. The second question I would have is, when do you get the U.S. Census numbers? They're out, I understand, and I don't know if anybody has actually received them or not, but I understand, like in the case of Mat-Su, that there is a dramatic uptick, so which, depending on what that ultimate number is, may have influenced somebody's testimony today even.
Mr. Ralston.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, the Department of Labor numbers, per our regulations, we're to get our numbers out on January 15th annually, so typically we get the numbers from labor just a couple days before that. Then we send out our number certified mail to every municipality in the state notifying of that, and then of notifying them also of the appeal process that occurs between January and May. And then by regulation, our commissioner certifies the municipal populations on June 1st. And the reason we do that, it's what's called prior data, because as Mr. Fick mentioned, it's a goal of the department, a number one emphasis is to get the money out the door as early as possible at the beginning of each fiscal year. So that's why we do this. We work between January and June, so everything's wrapped up. We have everything finalized, and then the money can go out the door the next month. I guess the issue with the census numbers, as was pointed out, the borough numbers don't show up from the U.S. Census Bureau, the estimates, until March, where we're already into our appeal period. And for the cities, they don't show up until July, which is the time we're already cutting checks and sending them out. And that's what would lead us to most likely, if this legislation passed, be required to use prior year estimates from the Census Bureau so that we would have all the numbers calculated and finalized by July so we could get the money out the door because the population numbers, the most recent estimates from the U.S. Census Bureau would be showing up about the time we're sending the money out. So we'd have to use census estimates from the previous fiscal year.
So, if I may.
Senator Thomas, please.
So if I understand correctly, you start writing checks in June sometime or something like that.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, I get my encumbrance list to our fiscal section in June. They're encumbering payments, and once we're legally authorized to send out the money, which is July 1, we try to get the money out the door as soon as that date as possible.
So, if I may continue, that would give somebody, at least in some cases, a couple of months to get you something, a couple of months actually to go through the appeal process. I realize before you're mailing checks anyhow, at least 2 to maybe 3 months. And I realize that you're encumbering, so that, you know, and I realize that you want to get this accomplished, but there are some that the statistics come earlier, some come a little later, and some would not even be appealing the process. So you'd know who was in the appeal process, which would limit the amount of liability. I realize, though, you have a certain pot of money, so you can't just start paying without having a concept of who all is getting what.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, exactly. We'd have to have everything finalized. There's no adjustments after we make that final calculation run. Mm-hmm. That's it. There's no, the money's obligated and out. You're right. If we did accept the March U.S. estimates, it would shorten the appeal period for organized boroughs. They'd only have from March then till May to possibly appeal. And so on. So we would have to work on that through our regs, but it's all doable. I mean, I'm just saying it's doable. It's just a policy call on your end, whether or not we use these or not. And if we were instructed to use these, we would implement it and move forward.
Okay. So it wouldn't be the biggest deal in the world. We'd work something out to make the range.
Sheriff, Senator Thomas, right.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any further questions, Mr. Ralston? I've got just a policy question. Does it not bother you that as I look at the numbers here and the testimonies just given by the city of Valdez, that some of these numbers are off by close to at least 20%, if not 22%?
Mr. Chairman, again, I guess as Mr. Fix said, we don't know which one is more accurate. They're different. I've worked with city of Valdez for many years, and yes, they do one every other year because the Department of Labor number and what their local estimate has been significant over the years, the difference. There's a couple others that seem to be significantly different over the years, like the city of Nenana for whatever reason. Again, we do our best. We have this, the regulations we are currently operating under, we implemented starting in 1987. So the regulations we're using now that are subject to possible revision, we've been using for 23 years.
So are they antiquated to a certain degree?
No, it's pretty straightforward. I could just quickly go through it. It's an order of precedence. So when the U.S. Census Bureau, the decennial numbers come out, they take priority over anything else. We are to use those based on our regulations.
And that's because of what?
Just that the department has determined that those are highly accurate. I mean, the federal government has gone through the process of coming up with the decennial census numbers. So for 1 year, at least, we use those numbers.
Okay.
Then there's a hierarchy. Local head count, a local hum, and then the Department of Labor number. So in a given fiscal year, if there's a conflict between any of those sources, we take the hierarchy, mm-hmm. and we determine, based on that hierarchy, that a local estimate or conducted by a local government would take precedent over an estimate by the Department of Labor. We give more credence to the local effort.
Okay. And in Valdez in particular, how when they come up with their count of 4498, how do they, is that a head count or is that an estimate?
Mr. Chairman, that's a housing unit method. Okay. They take a statistical sampling of their population.
So it's an estimate.
It's an estimate.
Okay. Are you interested in increasing the degree of accuracy the Department of Labor comes out with their numbers?
Mr. Chairman, we're always interested in using the most accurate information possible.
Well, the only way that I know to make more accurate is to give a penalty to the Department of Labor if they come up with a number that's wrong. Are you in favor of doing that?
I wouldn't want to... Mr. Chairman, I wouldn't want to speak to that issue.
Not part of this bill either.
I understand that.
Somebody else is here to comment on that one.
Yeah, that thing was getting...
And if I may, just quickly regarding the Mat-Su Borough. The U.S. Census estimate for the Mat-Su Borough's area-wide number is actually higher than the Department of Labor's number for their area-wide population. But what happened was when I looked at the population of Houston, Palmer, and Wasilla, those U.S. Census estimates were so much higher than the labor numbers that by the time I backed out those higher numbers from the higher MATSU, it was actually a negative. So they all went up. It's just that the cities went up proportionally higher than the overall borough numbers. So by the time I backed those up, it showed a negative for the MATSU borough. But in reality, all four of those populations are higher from the U.S. Census estimate.
And as you, since you're in charge of revenue sharing, do you, if this bill is implemented, do you anticipate there's going to be a cry from the smaller communities that say, "Hey, I'm not necessarily in favor of this, and I should have been there to testify against this bill"?
Mr. Chairman, as you can see on the spreadsheet, there's many that show increases and many that show decreases. So I'm sure you get a little bit from each side.
Thank you very much. Senator Thomas.
Just one other question. And just this is just a what if. If in that case of the MATSU and the cities within it, if in fact all of their numbers were up and municipal revenue sharing went up, then their numbers would be up if the amount of the pot was larger. So it might be a little narrow to simply look at it one year and say, this is the way we want to do it. The ability to allow the flexibility would be, in my mind, a more sensible approach to not only agreeing to a correct process, but also revenue sharing distribution.
Mr. Ralston?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thomas, I guess the point that I see it that you're making is, you know, this is just a point in time when did this spreadsheet. I took the numbers as they were at that day in time. Obviously, things change over time. You're just getting a very narrow view of how it would affect this program over the long term, basically. Just getting a snapshot, the best information we had at the time.
Any final question, Mr. Ralston? I've got one final question for you. There's a federal appeal process. There's a state appeal process. The state appeal process goes back, while the federal appeal process goes back to the last population count, so you start at that baseline. Would you be in favor of doing, since you're representing the state, would you be in favor of going more toward the federal process where the baseline has been established and go back to that as opposed to what the Department of Labor was a number of years ago?
Mr. Chairman.
And if it's out of your, you know, if it's out of your...
Yeah, that's pretty much out of my realm. It's sure. More of a Department of Labor policy call, and we get our numbers from Department of Labor. I can say that from the department's point of view on a local census, again, as was pointed out by the city of Valdez as an example, we do allow those for two consecutive years. So at least if they go through that effort at the local level, it is good for 2 years, sure, based on our current regulations.
If there's no further questions, thank you very much for coming up this afternoon.
Thank you.
Next we have, is it Brigida Windisch?
My name is Pukita Vindishkul. I'm an employee of DCRA, and I'm here to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions of... Say your name one more time for the record.
It's Pukita Vindishkul.
Vindishkul. Okay. Any questions of Ms. Vindishkul? Senator Thomas.
I don't know if I have a question, but what would be your area of expertise that we might question?
The area of expertise would probably be the difference between the housing... between the census estimates and the Alaska Department of Labor estimates. And I don't know if you're interested in the difference of the methodology that are used by census versus the Alaska Department of Labor. I just would talk in general terms.
Sure.
I don't have any specific questions.
Yeah, statisticians are not my strength. I took that class and I think I passed it, but it wasn't...
Statistics.
Yeah. Are there any other questions, Ms. Cole?
No.
If not, actually, I do have a number of questions. As you look at the, since you work for the state and obviously you're here to go ahead and, I'm assuming, to some degree stand up or defend the state's process, how do you rectify in your own mind where some of these numbers are off by 20 to 25%, as has been shown in Valdez, and you're more familiar with this residential housing count or estimate that's there? I mean, if it was my community, I certainly would be standing up in...
I would rather explain it with the methodology.
Okay.
Number one is the census, for instance, uses Census 2000 and builds the numbers from there.
Mm-hmm.
That means it looks at the changes in migration, in birth minus death. Birth minus death comes from the vital statistic from all over the United States. And these are the inputs into the census estimates. The Alaska Department of Labor has this wonderful file, which is the permanent fund file, and they are pretty good in geography when it comes to smaller places. Census, for example, does not put out estimates for unorganized places. These unorganized places also receive revenue sharing. So these numbers didn't even exist. And so the difference is census and labor are actually pretty close. They're within 1% on a state level. On a
what's that percent? I'm sorry.
Within 1%.
1%.
But on the geography, they differ. And the coming from the geography point of view, labor has a better information.
Senator Thomas.
So you talk about the permanent fund statistics. You accept those. And our permanent fund, when they use the permanent fund statistics, do you use addresses? Is that what
That's
it is?
Correct.
So post office boxes are acceptable in that case?
No, there are physical addresses now on the permanent fund.
Not where they may be mailed to, but a physical address?
A physical address is definitely the better indicator of geography for the demographer.
Some of the small villages of 100 people or so, what kind of physical addresses do you use there?
Well, it's the post office box. Then, if there is no physical address, of course, it's the zip code or so. There's a distinct zip code. There are a few communities who share a zip code, mm-hmm. but that's labor is well aware of those.
Like the community I come from, it has we don't have a post office.
Right.
That's there. We're using the known zip code. So how can you be accurate in that particular situation?
I'm
from Gallivan. Our zip code is 99762, which is a gnome because it's a contract post office place.
I would have to ask Rick Williams in that particular case. I wouldn't know. But usually, you know, the physical address, of course, would determine geography a lot better than a P.O. box or a shared zip code.
Sure.
But census does not have those tools. They don't have physical addresses.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you, Senator Thomas. I was just following up on your post office.
Well, that was
idea.
That's okay. Thank you. That was kind of the question I was getting to. They may be a physical address of an individual, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's where the PFD was mailed to.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're mailing out PFDs and they're requiring physical addresses, no one is checking the physical address because the PFD is going to a post office. It's just like my brother. He has a physical address. He lives in the state of Alaska, but he does not have mail delivery to his house, which is in, you know, a fairly populated rural area of Fairbanks. But his mail, all of his mail, and other people I know, goes to the post office. So I guess what I'm getting at is simply because if somebody is receiving a permanent fund dividend, if it is not going to a physical address and it's going to a post office box, but you use the statistic as a positive identification of a resident, I don't know if that is 100% accurate either, because there are a lot of people, I believe, that receive permanent funds in the state of Alaska that don't really live in the state of Alaska.
That is
Ms.
correct.
Ms. Windisch, go ahead.
But the physical addresses still do exist and are being used in the state. And like with the zip codes, they have the PO boxes have distinct zip codes, and the census does not have these updated records.
Mr. Tyson looks like he might have
records.
He wants to step into the arena here.
Mr. Chairman,
identify yourself for the record, please, and go ahead with your answer.
Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. I would just like to point out to the committee that there is on the permanent fund form mailing address as well as physical address for it,
right.
You know, on it. They would determine physical address by what's in the physical address portion of the application, regardless of where an actual warrant or check would be sent.
Follow up, Senator Thomas?
No, I think that's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah,
there's two addresses and you're mailing it to a post office box. Doesn't necessarily mean that somebody doesn't, that isn't their brother or their sister or their uncle's house that they're having to mail to. So as far as the accuracy of just saying that that's a great list and how accurate it is the permanent fund. I agree it's probably fairly accurate, but there are people that receive permanent funds that do not live in the state of Alaska, and there's been a lot of dispute over that. As you know, even the military, some people say they collect it for as long as they can till the 10 years goes out and they've not come back from North or South Carolina or wherever they may have moved to, so that creates an issue as well. But I just wanted to make sure I was understanding correctly. If we're using permanent fund addresses but mailing checks to post office boxes, that is not a count of an actual individual at a home or anything. So,
Senator Menard.
Bye-bye.
Keeping on the same line of accuracy, I'm going to go out on the limb a little bit. Is there software out there now? I'm just thinking of, you know, Google Earth. You can go and you can trace where someone lives. Is there any that the Census Bureau is using, or have you explored that at all? Because I think in the world that we live in now, geographically, we should be able to have software where we can go and really see that there's homes. I mean, you can actually with this go right up to their door at their home. And is there anything that you're aware of out there that other states might be using?
Not for population. The assessors sure love it because they see the new structures and you would see new population and new development in areas.
Follow, Senator Menard.
No, I just see in a very short time, I bet there will be something, there will be some software company that's going to come forward and say, every state, this has got to be an issue. And so this is how we can prove that there are residents in the, I hope they don't show me walking up to my door, but, you know, that is a possibility.
Okay. No further questions. Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. Next, we have Catherine Dodge. Ms. Dodge, are you on?
She's here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This is from Albert.
Please.
Hi, good evening or afternoon. I'm Dr. Catherine Dodge. I'm with the Fairbanks North Star Borough. I'm the census liaison as well as the economic development specialist. And the issue underlying the legislation before you is not new. In 2007, the FNSB received the annual Department of Labor population estimate, and it reflected a growth of about 500 people. I knew we had built more than 800 residential units that year. So I said, something is off, and we were compelled to do an estimate. Prior to my tenure at the borough, there were concerns about low DOL estimates, but because of the prohibitive expense of conducting an appeal, the borough did not pursue it. The result of the Fairbanks North Star Borough 2007 appeal was an additional 9,000 people, or 10%. We then appealed to the U.S. Census Bureau, who adjusted our population by 7,000, or 8%. Fairbanks is not the only community that has felt compelled to appeal DOL estimates, as you've heard today. Over the years, Juneau, Valdez, Nanaminqua, Emonic, Huitzuc, Nicolai, and Nenana have all appealed. In fact, of the 52 communities that you have the list of, 47 of them appealed, and they were communities of less than 1,000. So some of them have appealed four times since the last census, like three or four of them. This is a significant issue for them. We are, however, the only community to appeal to the U.S. Census Bureau. Our 2007 appeal used a phone survey and assessor's records. You were just talking about the availability of electronic records. We have very capable electronic assessor's records with GPS on them, so we use those to as our source of appeal. But the methodology has since been changed, and it now requires us to randomly select from a mixture of 2,600 census blocks and 109 road service areas. Next, we are to make physical contact with each resident in the randomly selected structures within these 2,600 census blocks. And this is across a borough that's 7,441 miles. Mm-hmm. You can imagine some of these things that might be selected would be a fly-in or a go up a river. And some of them include roads anyway. So this is more time-consuming and expensive than the decennial census itself, which simply sends out or leaves behind a physical paper survey. The U.S. Census Bureau, the Division of Community and Regional Affairs, and DOL treat the results of these appeals very differently. The U.S. Census Bureau accepts the new figures. They recalculate back to the latest census, and then they use it as a baseline for future estimates. It also uses the adjusted, right, for future estimates. DCRA recognizes the expense and effort involved in conducting an appeal, so they use the results for 2 years. DOL, however, does not recognize any of these appeals, as evidenced through Valdez, through adjustments to its models inputs. It is for these reasons that we've been advocating that DCRA promulgate regulations to recognize the U.S. Census estimate as a reliable data source. We received indication in March of last year that this would be done. However, we have since been told that this option is not available to us. Thus, we are here using the legislative process. It seems to be the only remaining manner to address it. To those who see communities like ours benefiting from this legislation at the expense of other communities, we would say rather than ask us to remain undercounted, which our successful appeals have proven, we would like all communities to benefit from an alternative, credible, peer-reviewed methodology that, once done, is used in future estimates. And I asked my U.S. Census Bureau contact about small communities. I said, can they challenge population estimates also? What kind of records do they need? And he said, basically, they will take whatever records a community has to document their population or their structures. Finally, regarding the discrepancy between the use of census estimates versus DOL that are available each year for larger communities and those that are a year delayed for smaller communities, I would suggest it is better for a community to have the option of challenging the U.S. Census Bureau once and being able to use that figure for the balance of the decade, even a year behind, if it is higher, than to having current estimates that are low and must be challenged every 2 years. So thank you for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Senator Kukish.
Just wanted to make a comment that this bill is only 13 lines long and only talks about using the HIRA. No, doesn't have anything to do with the count, doesn't have anything to do with comparison, doesn't have anything to do with appeals, and I really wish people we would stay to the fact of whether or not you like this bill because it gives you the ability to use the higher number. That's all the question should be. And I'm not being obstructionist or anything. I'm just telling you that, you know, we have so many bills before us, it's just that this is a bill that it's very simple. And I appreciate the information about the appeal process and about the census and about all that, but this bill doesn't talk about that. I really would like to have you come up here and say, I support this bill because I like the idea of having the higher number. I don't like the idea of having the higher number.
And I would add to that that what I like about the bill is not only does it give the higher number, the more accurate number, it also gives me the ability to influence that its accuracy, to ensure its accuracy is one of the inputs.
Yeah. And follow up, just...
Senator,
and it doesn't. This bill doesn't change the other processes, the appeal or anything that. That all just stays the same. So while I appreciate the information on the appeal process, it has nothing to do with this bill in front of us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's take a brief and easier.
You should move it out.
Ms. Dodge, if not, any final comments, since you seem to be the expert? I'm assuming your doctorate is in this area.
Actually, it's in social sciences. I just have been very involved in the process the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. But in honor of Senator Kukesh's request, I would say if you have some questions, I certainly can tell you about the PFD and the accuracy of it. I can tell you that the census has been out using GPS to document locations. But as Senator Kukesh would say, that's not what this is about. So if you have a question, I'm happy to answer it.
Okay.
Otherwise.
Any further questions, Mr. Dodge?
No.
Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. Anybody else here in Juneau or online that wants to go ahead and testify on this bill? If not, we'll close public testimony. What's the will of the committee?
Move the bill.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move Senate Bill 308, Determination of Population for community revenue sharing payments, out of the committee with the fiscal note attached.
Individual recommendations.
Any objection? If not, this bill passes out. The next meeting will be on Tuesday, April 6th. We'll hear House Bill 273, Municipal Land Entitlement for Rangel and Haynes. This meeting is adjourned.